Monday morning, new day, a new week. Karen Segrist will be our subcommittee assistant. Dallas Wine represents the Legislative Fiscal Office. This is the subcommittee of Ways and Means General Government, and we'll act as a subcommittee of the subcommittee as we continue on with our work session, which is a continuation from last Thursday of the work session on House Bill 5002, the Department of Administrative Services. And with that, Dallas, we'll just have you as the scheduler kind of give us an update as to where we're at this morning before we start back in on the orbit system.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, last week some questions were posed of the status of the new budget information tracking system, and so we have with us today Pat Payne, who is the project manager for that, can bring us up to date and where we're at. The questions were asked about timelines and the like, and then we can just move forward it.
Okay, let's do that. Pat?
And you have before you something that Pat handed out. Well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Pat Payne. I'm the project manager for the Oregon Budget Information Tracking System Project, also known as ORBITS. That's with Budget Management Division. And I put together an overview, which you should have a copy of. It's a one-page
Phase two?
Yes.
Okay.
The first phase of the project was putting the core system into place, which all agencies use to build their budgets this time around. We also did the governor's budget using that system. And the legislative fiscal staff is now using that system as well. We've implemented in phase two the first release of in March of 2003, which basically starts putting appropriations into the system and will generate the appropriation controls over to the accounting system. The next release, which is release two, will be for the next budget preparation cycle, which starts in April 2004. The system has to be ready for all of the central functions to take place before agencies actually get in and start using it. What I've tried to do is bullet some of the different functions that will be part of that release. The main one, which I believe is the topic that you were talking about on Thursday, is actually converting accounting data into the ORBIT system. And this is something that hasn't ever been done before in state government. This is really a first from a standpoint of bringing accounting together with budget in an automated way for all state agencies. We have done something similar to this when we start a budget preparation cycle, in that we bring prior biennium actual expenditures in. But now we're going to be going on a month-by-month basis and bringing those expenditures into the system. So it is going to be a new process for agencies. It's going to take a while to work out all the kinks in that process. But when we bring that next release up, we will have that functioning on a monthly basis.
And, Pat, you're on target to do that now for February of 2004.
Yes, we are.
Let me just ask a question relative to that. Will that give us budget variances month by month as well? If you anticipate, for instance, a 24-month budget and a 24-month appropriation, will it give us variations month by month for managerial tools?
That would, Mr. Chair, that would be in release three, as we start looking at more of the functions of a budget execution system. We would start looking at what additional ways that we can pull those pieces of data together, because ORBITS itself is a biennially based system. It doesn't have month-by-month budgets. It just has, it's a 24-month budget system. Currently, in the accounting system, agencies put allotments into the accounting system. Eventually, we can get to the place where we have that allotment information, and we're doing that kind of comparison on a quarterly basis.
So the allotment is a monthly allotment that the department would stick in, or is it a quarterly allotment right now?
Mr. Chair, currently it's a quarterly allotment basis. There are agencies that do a month-by-month projection within their own systems.
Okay.
We're basically building, we're kind of starting the core and then building based on the requirements that have been identified thus far.
So if you've got agencies that are presently sticking in a quarterly allotment and they anticipate that perhaps their dues are due within this particular quarter and so forth, and the dues happen to go up or they happen to have other variances, will it show a variance from that quarter versus what they have allotted?
Mr. Chair, it would depend at the level that they would put that budget in.
Now, Pat, let me back up. Maybe mm-hmm. my question anticipates when you say that they would put that budget in. The systems that they use to track presently are the information tracking system, the budget information tracking system.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
So we don't have folks that are using an off-the-shelf package from somewhere else, and then they're trying to massage and convert that into the Orbitz, do we?
Mr. Chair, currently, as I've noted in that first paragraph, all agencies use Orbitz to prepare their budget, their biennial budget.
But do they use Orbitz then for their accounting purposes beyond that?
No, they do not. Not currently. If they are using kind of a chicken and an egg process, if you will, from a standpoint that you approve a budget, and then agencies take that information that's been approved and they break it out by quarter.
And do they use Orbitz to do that?
No, they're not currently using Orbitz to do that because that functionality has not been implemented yet.
Is that what's anticipated in June of 2005, Orbitz 3?
Right now we have some very high-level requirements that have been identified for that Release 3, which we'll be fleshing out. If that is a requirement to actually generate allotments out of the system, out of Orbitz, to accounting, then we can take a look at that and include that in that release.
Okay, Pat, you're telling us this is one of a kind. It's the first state to do some of this. Other states don't use budget systems that they can track and find variances and those kinds of things like a business might?
Mr. Chair, when we first started this project, I talked to all 50 states, and there were there weren't really any states at that point in time that had pulled together budget and accounting into an integrated system.
Same platform?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And, in fact, currently there's probably just a handful. I haven't made another survey of states to identify. It's from a standpoint of the data and the level that it's kept at. Currently, an allotment is prepared by an agency at a category level. So within the accounting system, and I should say that they're managing their monthly expenditures at a personal services S&S and capital outlay total. The appropriation itself is the high-level control that keeps all of those expenditures at an appropriation by quarter basis.
From what you're explaining to me, though, Pat, if they went outside of their budgeted amount, there's no bells or whistles that would go off to let them know that that's what they were doing at the time that they expended beyond that. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, down to the lowest level of an account, there's not any kind of a check and balance. For example, if you said an out-of-state travel or that kind of line item level,
okay,
there is not a budgetary control that prevents them from spending that account level.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Patridge has some questions, and we have Teresa on deck as well. So, Representative Patridge.
So I'm just trying to get at my arm. I understand those kind of OPB and some of the quasi-governmental agencies being exempt, but my question is, when's everyone going to be on the RSTARS accounting system and have Orbitz and RSTARS linked up? And I guess, is that a requirement? Is it not a requirement? I mean, my business, we track GL numbers. Every department or facility or whatever, the same GL numbers drive, and we can look across GL numbers and those kinds of things.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, for the record, I'm Teresa McHugh from the Department of Administrative Services. I think every session we bring over who's left as agencies that haven't made the transition, and that's a discussion within their work sessions of what resources and what their process is going to be to move over to the system. In terms of moving forward, I think our intent is, the message came clearly several years ago when the first financial master plan was out there, and it's kind of been Pat's guiding principles, is first you wanted a good accounting system built, and that's our STARS was the first phase, but then you wanted the budget system to be able to talk to the accounting system and make sure those all matched up. And that's really where we are today. We did the first phase of the budget, and we're at that next phase.
So everyone's on, or?
And we have, I think we have the university system not on, and again, they're a little bit different because you gave them some flexibility a few years ago, so they're not on our STARS. They do reporting at a higher level to our STARS, but they're not on directly. Corrections and ODOT, I believe, are the only other two large agencies at this point, and I believe those continue to be discussions with their work and their subcommittees about what progress they're going to make toward getting over. And they still send over information again to the system. So our STARS has every agency in there. It's just whether it's built there using that system or whether it's transported in. In terms of then the next piece, which is we want to move and do this, the messages are very strong. We are moving now. We hope that when we come back in 2 years, you're going to see agencies connected. The caveat there is we know there will be some agencies where now that we have to match up structures, there's going to be some places where they don't match up quite well, and we're going to work through that with legislative fiscal and with anybody here that wants to have a discussion, especially if it leads to bigger policy issues about how those match up. Where I caution is that's clearly the intent. I don't have any agencies saying, no, we don't want to do that or we're being difficult. What we have is if we had another interim of five special sessions, or if we had a turnaround in the economy and the accountants all find a way to leave state government and are held frozen, those are the kinds of things that would play in where we'd have to come back and have a discussion and say, okay, here's what we can move and here's what we can't. But clearly that's the next phase.
I guess I'm still not understanding what the technical issue is with the bridge. If we're using a common set of GLs that drive from your RSTAR system to your Orbit system in terms of your actuals, I guess I'm not. Are agencies not using common GL numbers? Are there problems with how agencies are doing their accounting practices? I'm just trying to understand where the problem is. And why it's taking so long.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick.
Yes.
Basically, when we bring the data over from the accounting system, we are using the GL. That's how we're pulling the data over. And we, at this point in time, ODOT and Corrections load data into our STARS. That's where we get their data, is from our STARS. And so we are pulling that GL, and those internal structures are matched up. It's more the process that agencies go through that's going to take some time in getting everything aligned. And some of that, as an example, you've got an accounting shop that may be coding the expenditures a little differently than the budget shop wants them to be rolling up to a budgetary level. Because you could have one account, out-of-state travel, that has many lower levels on the accounting side. And so it's getting all of those lined up so that as the data comes over, it's good.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I might caution in terms of saying it's taking so long. This was not envisioned. This piece was not part of the first phase.
Okay.
So this really is on schedule with where we project it to be. And it's partially a timing issue, being a biennial budget, of when do numbers go out to agencies that they start to use, and so when do you actually see it here? But again, I think it's actually on the original time frame of what we expected. And at this point, we're just putting some caution in saying we're moving to this next phase. It's a little more technically detailed, and we want to make sure everybody understands. If we were to have another interim like the last one, we could be back here saying, uh-oh, we're having some timing issues. I don't necessarily foresee that happening, but we're well on the way to making this next step work.
Further questions, Representative Johnson?
A couple of questions. The first one is the university system scheduled to get to a greater depth of detail at any point in time, or was that policy out of the legislature that they got to report at this oblique high level?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think under Senate Bill 271, there's a belief that that's where they have legislative approval to function at that level.
Okay. And the next question is perhaps a little more complicated, so bear with me as I ask it, because I may ask it badly. We have been in this same room hearing testimony from DLCD about how their positions don't line up with the Orbit system. And apparently this has been a long problem, like going back a couple of years. And I'm trying to figure out how it is, if the system is functioning as well as it is, that you can have the meltdown that is occurring at DLCD.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think it's not really to have to bring another system into this. I think that's the position inventory control system versus Orbitz, which later down the road we'll have a discussion of personnel systems and how they eventually fit in. That's part of the next step of the master plan, actually. With DLCD, my understanding of the history of that one, the system actually, the audit said, wait a minute, we have an issue here. We don't have the funds don't match up. And it was in the process of working with management, past management, that said, wait a minute, you're right, we don't, but we have another way to deal with that. And so we've got these other funds, and just give us a limitation, and everything will be okay. And then, lo and behold, it wouldn't be okay. So that had less to do with the system that actually did the alert and the analyst that said, wait a minute, we have an issue, and more to do, I think, with, and not necessarily management giving false information, but believing there was another way to try and get this fixed without having to actually give up positions and do the formal reclassifications. I think you see a kind of, if you will, this biennium, an airing of that by both the agency and then I think, frankly, staff on both sides said, we're not going to go into this again. We have to get this cleaned up.
Follow up, Mr.
C. Yes, C.
C.
I'm sorry.
Bueno.
Como gusta, señora.
I guess what I'm trying to get to, Teresa, is that one of the themes of this session has been truing up of the budgets. And you've got a situation which seems to me, and I'm trying to follow a conversation that I wasn't in last session, but it seems to be at least 4 years old, or 3 years old. And it seems to perpetuate a kind of agency sleight of hand. Rather than truing up what the budget picture looks like and going through the rigor of the reclassifications, it's let us duct tape the answer together and everything will be hunky-dory. Well, the duct tape's unraveled. The answer isn't hunky-dory. I think it just continues this acid drip of people's confidence in the legislature. And I guess what I'm asking, and maybe this is a question that would involve Director Weeks, too, is when is this unacceptable? And when do the agencies get yarded into DAS that is trying to inculcate good agency behavior and say it is simply unacceptable to try to safety wire positions to money and we're all going to look the other way and 2 years later you've got people pretty unhappy about how it all came to pass.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm sure Gary would like to respond too. If I can, I'll talk about a little more of the specific and then I think Gary can talk a little bit more about some of the things he's doing. In this situation, I guess the first thing I would say is if you went back and you weren't part of that discussion last time but looked at the record, really the last two sessions, I believe, actually, on that one, staff have, in terms of your budget staffs on both DAS and LFO, have raised the issue. And frankly, not to say that politics ever enters into the discussion.
I'd be shocked if I learned otherwise.
But frankly, the decision was ultimately made, and I'm not saying it was just a legislative. I think that was for the former governor. It was a high priority, and I think he placed it on the table as one of his go-home issues. And I think that led to some degree why it was perpetuated. So to some degree in the past there's been kind of a decision that would be perpetuated in that individual agency But the reason it was before the legislature in the first place was because staff said, wait a minute, we're going to true these up. So in general, do you see that happening a lot? Every time we find it, it's raised, and your staff raises it. And I think generally the approach is to get them fixed. I think, frankly, one of the benefits of the vacancy process we're looking through is we get agencies to say, wait a minute, I really wasn't using the dollars for that. That's always the key, is to try and get the budgets as trued up. In this particular case, I think we had some other issues that played into why it was continued versus cleaned up.
And I guess what I'm looking for from you, Mr. Weeks, on the record is, as the state's chief operating officer, some indication that that's unacceptable.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Gary Weeks, Director of the Department of Administrative Services, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson. It is unacceptable. And this is, I guess what I need to be blunt about this, is it's not a system problem. It's an agent. It's an issue with the agency. Now, the PIC system works fine. The agency simply hasn't, we haven't managed to use it. And right now, those positions in DLCD are being integrated into the PIC system. They will be in the PIC system. And it's not acceptable to have, whether it's DLCD or any other agency, having positions that we can't keep track of within the PIC system. But we are, at this time, correcting that with DLCD.
Good. Thank you. And thanks for your patience, because realizing that orbits and PICs aren't the same, but to the degree that all of our systems ought to be talking to each other and one system be able to flag anomalies in another system would be ideal.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think we haven't really come this session with everything else with that next piece, but there is a master plan that says even the personnel data needs to eventually be integrated in so that all these systems are able to talk to each other. So that is on the official master plan that says what are the next pieces.
Can I just follow up on that? Because that, I think, as we work towards vacancy issues, and Dallas is presently passing out a handout dated May 1st, Vacant Position Review, Department of Administrative Services, vacancy list for the Department of Administrative Services had 137 vacant positions, and where those are at, and the percentage of the workforce. My angst is that, and I'm assured that this doesn't happen, but my angst is that somehow that additional position authority for those vacant positions then basically become a carte blanche. Folks are going to wince when I say this, but carte blanche for department heads to go ahead and provide bonuses in the form of extra time, overtime, and those kinds of things. I'm concerned that any of that may ever get out of hand, and so I'm anxious that we really have position authorities, and not just within the Department of Administrative Services. We had an issue come before us when we were dealing with the Legislative Assembly's budget, and rather than hire the lawyers that are necessary in Legislative Council and have position authority for those lawyers, what they do is they get a batch of vacancies, and then they go out and hire some really high caliber, very excellent help. And really what we've got to do is we've got to just go ahead and say, from a management standpoint, let's go ahead and budget for a position authority for some really excellent help to help us during the Legislative Assembly, and allocate and appropriate the funds necessary to attract that individual or those individuals who would fill those positions, and not leave 7 of the 55 positions vacant so that we can get enough money to do what it is that we intended to do in the first place. And I realize that's a different venue, but that's really the first place that I've actually had someone say, I really need to have this money for this group of folks.
It's more along the lines of truth in budgeting, I think. I mean, this is a common theme here today of trying to be true to the budgeting system. But in fairness, I have to say that over the years, as the union contracts are approved, the legislature has never, at least not in my memory, fully funded any contract. And so what happens is the contract is signed by the governor, sometimes after the legislature's even gone home. And the assumption is we will meet the requirements of the contract, and the way we do it is we will keep positions vacant in order to have that money to spend for the contract. So that is, we've built that into our system biennium after biennium with that, because we just did never fund the contract. And then some, Mr. Chairman, some of what you suggested did happen, also does happen, and that is overtime requirements are such that the agency says, I can't fill this position. I mean, ideally, we should be getting exactly the positions we asked for. We should be filling them with the level of people that we asked for, and that's it.
And Mr. Chair, when we find big blots, when you see a pattern such as you explained in legislative council, for example, a few years back in the budgeting process, we realized that the Department of Corrections kept a block of positions, a very large block of positions, solely for the purpose of paying overtime. And that was cleaned up during the legislative process to say, let's budget it in the overtime category, right, not as positions. And so you will see some, in some places, this is probably going to show you a pattern where an agency comes forward and says, here's what I've really been doing, which you may then want to move the money. In some cases, you're going to see folks that the vacancy occurs and they can't find somebody to fill, and then, yes, they are using some of those dollars to pay overtime, but it's not because they want to, it's not because that's part of the plan at the front end. It's just they had vacancies and or they haven't been able to fill them at the beginning of the biennium, and so there is some of that, those dollars. And I think that's going to be the, they'll be the ones that are on the bubble of how often does it happen and how do you true it up. That'll be the hardest.
My concern in that regard, Teresa, would be that if a person is hired at salary X, that and if in truth and fact they need X plus in order to come into that, then does the department head say, I am making that up by having them work 4 extra hours at time and a half to give them a total of 6 hours extra compensation? And to do that not from an overtime allotment, but to do that, and please don't misunderstand,
yeah, no,
with regard to how folks become available for legislative council during a legislative session, I think he's done it very artfully, and I think it's fine to have done it the way that he's done it. He, had he not been able to get the really high caliber of people that he was able to fill back in, then he would have truly had to use the position authority that was there. As it is, he's got some really excellent people that are willing to come back for the 1,040 hours or whatever is necessary to accomplish that. So I think that it's, I would like to see that cleaned up, and the closer we can come to an actual STARS budget and Orbitz 3, then and merging those with the correct position authorities, I think we're gradually getting there. I guess the thing that disturbs me is, from a business person standpoint, how is the state so far behind the way industry has accepted and done this in the past? I mean, it just seems that we are a quantum leap behind, even though Oregon seems to be moving forward faster than other states by the testimony here today, that we are still well behind industry in that process. I don't know. That's not a criticism of somebody who's been at the job here for less than 3 months. So, Gary, you also then had, we do have the position information which Dallas has passed out, and then your additional testimony relative to Productivity Improvement Fund. Do you want to just any further comments relative to the vacancy list that we've got?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. I mean, this lays out very nicely. I think the key number here probably is the 86, because the others are limited duration. They were filled. They were eliminated. It's the 86 is the number that we have that really gives us the flex, which is about 9% of our workforce.
Okay, Gary, and then Productivity Improvement Fund.
We gave you that report, Mr. Chairman, on the productivity.
General information established 1993, and then
yes, sir.
48 projected submissions between 93 and 01. Examples of loans and examples of grants. Okay, Patrick, you had some questions about that. You want to respond?
I just wanted to know how the money was being spent and what the history was.
Great.
Chair, I think that's satisfactory, and we'll have to deal with the other issues at a later point.
Thank you very much. Further questions for Mr. Weeks while we have him there? Representative Patrick.
Mr. Chair, we never really walked through some of these other items that we had.
The fee development rate, fee rate?
Well, not the fee rate necessarily. We didn't really walk through some of these other packages, but
the,
we don't have to do that right now.
Budget status report.
The line item analysis pieces that we had them go through.
Oh, yes.
I was just concerned on 3190 that we were taking the numbers for the shift differential, taking out that standard inflationary reduction of 3.5%, that should have been picked up. In the personnel freezes
Dallas
that we had across the board. I talked to the co-chairs about that. I know it's little money, but every little bit's counting these days. I wanted to make sure the shift differential piece didn't include the inflationary roll-up.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, it shouldn't, because this is strictly payroll.
Well, no, but it was.
Had an inflation increase.
It's got a 3.5 inflation factor, and I didn't know if we were picking those up in a higher line item or not when we're doing all these budgets. I mentioned that to Ken and those guys. I just want to make sure we're picking that up in this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, the numbers that the agency is working off of are the governor's balanced budget numbers. The recommendations that Dallas has made to pull out the 3.5% inflation, reduce AG's rate, et cetera, are pulled out at the higher level, and then when we go back, we have to balance them out at this lower level. But that's not reflected in here, but will be once Dallas...
Well, that's all I wanted to make. I wanted to make sure that was the case, Mr. Chair.
For the record, that was Cora Parker. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry.
Representative Patridge?
And the travel thing is the same.
Right. I think that's true, Mr. Chairman, across all these line items, that Dallas pulled it all out. We have to go back, as Cora said, and rebalance it back down.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. We took it out at a very high level, and we'll have to redistribute those downward adjustments to the various categories.
Let me just make sure I understand this then. So the standard inflation rate out of 4,100 interstate travel, that disappears. Thanks. That's it. Real slow.
All right. Mr. Chair, I also had a question on 4,250, and we can go into the rate discussion. My concern is the state controller's increase, the IRMD increases, for the general government data center seems exceptionally large. I mean, that was the one rate that I wanted to get my arms around. That's just in this budget alone, it's $6.5
million.
That's trading around between gas, and so I guess that was my question.
That's the $5.05 million state controller increases, and then the IRMD increase of $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm. I guess that was, that was a big budget driver number that I guess I didn't have my arms around, and that was my major fee increase piece that I saw.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Cindy Beck, Department of Administrative Services. We knew that that would be an issue, and it was an issue for us, so we did prepare a piece specifically on the rates. We had a major problem last session with the rates. They were reduced. As you see in the second paragraph, they were reduced from $72 to $5.88 in the middle biennium, which was a huge mistake. The good news is the agencies that primarily impacted, which was State Controllers Division and PERS, had the money in their budgets at the higher rate. So we went back to those rates and were able to continue for the rest of the biennium. Had we not been able to do that, we probably would have had to shut down. The good news is that it was fixed, and the current rates are now lower than they were for the 9901 biennium.
Are those reflected then within the amount on 4250?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Patridge?
Yes, sir. I appreciate the fact that they gave us the difference. The 9901 actuals were $15 million. We approved $14 million in 0103 legislatively adopted budget. I know the estimates numbers are off, but this is a huge number bump here. I'm willing to do what the chair wants, but I just am concerned that how can you jump from $5 and I was interested in what the justification is between moving from 588, even if there was a problem, what drove the 588 number that now drives it to $72.19.
Mr. Chairman,
and what drives it from 296 to 27? I just am if it was so bad before and we messed up so bad before. Where do we get to the
Representative fix? Patridge, I think what we're trying to reflect here is that there was a point where The CIO at the time thought we had way too much ending balance, and we made this dramatic slash in the rates, dropping down to, what is it,
$5 for the expense, right.
And that was not done well. That was not what it cost us to run the system. And so we had to, you know, recalibrate that and bring the actual revenue back to what it costs the system. So you have this trough, a high level, big, steep, deep drop, and now we're trying to rebuild the budget back to what it really costs, Mr. Chairman and Representative Patridge.
So, please, Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair, not to get into a cross debate, but the 9901 actuals were $15.4 million. Now, what you say is, on paragraph 2, IRMD rates for the 01-03 biennium were generally reduced significantly from the 9901 biennium, but were particularly slashed in the general government data center. So my question is, either you have a huge volume spike that requires this between 9901 and 0305, or the rates were messed up in 9901 too, and they were too low. It doesn't calculate for me, and so I'm.
Do we know, Cindy, which is it a combination of everything?
And you got faster, and you have faster computers now, so it's just not all driving for
me. Less money faster.
What's that?
Which enabled us to get less money faster, I think, with the faster computers. But go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, Cora Parker for the record again. I don't know if this will help explicitly, but a couple of things are going on. The $14 million amount that you see in 0103 was absolutely not correct to begin with. That amount should have been higher to begin with. You have to remember that rates are a reflection of what's going on in the budget specifically. So between 9901 and 0103 and 0305, you have personal service roll-up costs, which we all know have been fairly significant over that period of time. The general inflation that was originally allowed in 0103 and is in the number that you see in the 0305 number sitting before you. Again, we just talked about that being somewhat rolled out moving forward. So you see a lot of those things feeding into that rate moving forward. And
Cora, how much
I don't have
this,
the specifics for you. But
how much of this is driven by e-government? Sorry, you just said you don't have the specific. How much of it is driven by e-government, the conversion there?
Mr. Chair, I would have to defer to the agency on that, but I would say that there's not a direct implication here. I'm looking for the back of the room, and Mike is nodding and saying
so
that's correct.
Will we be able to proceed forward with our e-government initiative?
Yes.
Okay.
The GGDC is not directly.
Okay.
And to address Representative Patridge, there are in SCD in particular, and some of the other divisions within DAS and other agencies for that matter, there are some volume increases that are also embedded within here. So we're not talking just about a pure rate increase. We are talking about some volume increases as well.
Representative Patridge.
But Mr. Chair, I still lack the understanding of how it can jump so significant. I mean, I don't know. I'd be interested to see what the 9901 rate was, what it was reduced to in 0103, and now what our rate is. And this is why I was saying I was interested in seeing how they built the rate, because to justify moving the rate so substantially is huge, and once you strip out personnel costs and you strip out some of those things like we did in the AG's rate, inflation factors and some of those things, I don't know if we push the rate lower or not. And I guess I'm concerned with this revenue category. If we back out the inflationary factors, we back out all these other things, can we pump the rate lower, and does our revenue go down, and that affect other agencies that are out there? And I just don't want to miss the boat
Mr. Chairman,
this deal.
Could we take a crack at asking Mike Fries to see if he can, in a very short period of time, walk us through this?
Yeah, maybe we could do that. Maybe if Mike can come forward, then.
Well, can I ask Dallas? Did we lower the, I don't care if Mike comes up, but did we lower the, have we lowered the rate across state agencies as a result of the inflationary freeze and those kinds of things, or are they still going to keep the same rate?
No,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, one of the purposes of getting this budget out first is to make adjustments to rates and to assessments. So we have, I think I handed out, we were looking at about $11 million reduction in assessments and rates across state agencies. So we haven't done it yet. We have to wait for this budget to go out. So we will be.
So when the rates are set, then we'll true up the amounts of the receipts that are being shown in the other categories.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I'm sorry, Dallas. That's what I was trying to say before, that what the agency is presented to you here is based off of the numbers that are in GBB. Dallas has made some recommendations. Those are what you'll talk about today. And if you pass those recommendations, we will then have to go down to the detail level and out to agencies, and you'll then make those adjustments in your other committees and through the regular ways and means process at an agency-by-agency level as well.
Cora, do you have the development of the $72.19? Do you have that right?
I think that's what Cindy has and what Mr. Freeze would perhaps.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, page 3 of this rate, both talked about the GBBC rates, what goes in them, and Mike will talk about the specifics, but we'd be happy to go through this with you. I think
the fee and rate.
Right, and the fee and rate. Mike, you want to go into the details?
This is page 3.
I mean, I think the reality was several CIOs ago, there was a mistake made, and there was an assumption that we had a bunch of money, and this was an attempt to reduce that balance, and it was incorrect. But as I said, the two major users, PERS and the department, had the original price list money in their budget, so when we didn't have to raise the rate, they already had that money, so did not have to ask for additional dollars. Would you like Mike to come up?
Yeah, please, let's have Mike come up while we're reviewing that Enterprise Network Services and the General Government Data Center presentation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Fries. I'm the Acting State Chief Information Officer. The real issue with the data center rates amounts to the fact that the aberration occurred in 2001-03. In fact, what we probably should be explaining is why the rates were cut in 2001-03 to an extraordinary low of, from $72 down to $5.88. Again, the belief at that time was that the data center had huge cash reserves, and part of what contributed to that belief was the fact that our cycling for accounting was behind. So we had funds that were committed for expenses to maintain systems and for other things that were not accounted for, and then they had a cash balance, and when somebody took a look at that, it looked like there was a lot of cash in the program. In fact, there was far less. The other thing that they were trying to accomplish, there was a rate study that was done evidently about that time, and all the costs to run that data center were not loaded into the final rates. When we went to the $5.88 rate, we were already losing money. You couple that with the fact that we upgraded the mainframe computer system and it had much, much faster processing speed than the one that preceded it. Again, the rates are based on time. That exacerbated the problem and actually multiplied it. So what we had was almost, going into the biennium, almost a $10 million hole in that budget.
So, Mike, the $10 million, that hole that's been built in, is built into the $72 rate?
Actually, no. We have recovered most of that by basically cutting costs. We have slashed costs in that section. We've held positions vacant. We've cut positions. We've deferred maintenance. We've done a variety of other things. We've deferred expenditures to try and hold the line. And we've absorbed it elsewhere within the division and the department. That $72 rate is pure cost recovery rate. It doesn't increase the cash in that section. It just covers the cost. And again, because of the faster processor speed and the fact that that rate is actually less than what it was in the 99-01 budget cycle, agencies are paying less for the same amount of service than they were then.
Representative Patridge?
I guess that's my concern is we got faster processing speed, so we shouldn't need as much hardware and other things because our growth isn't growing exponentially. I'm sure we're processing things faster. We're getting things done faster. Are we lowering any costs at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, the processing speed increase handles the increased workload as well. Actually, the consumption rate has increased, particularly in the state controller's division, substantially because the number of records in the statewide financial management application continues to grow. So the amount of processing has increased substantially. We wouldn't have been able to continue to process that load with the old computer. We had to upgrade. So the workload has increased.
Okay. The workload that's increased is within the controller's office?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And what that has done is it allows us to manage it more cost-effectively. The faster processor results in the ability to process more records much more quickly.
So really what we've got is we've got an increased rate on the controller's office as it's shared out throughout the agencies of government.
Yes, Mr. Chair, yes.
And that... Should that be reflected in the IRMD rate, the $72? Or is it reflected there?
Mr. Chair, it is reflected there, and that's a cost that the State Controller's Division pays us to provide that data processing service.
So that's built into that total rate. Mike, what should preclude us or prevent us in the future from having this issue come up again? Who checks the rates? Who looks for... those kinds of issues, so these wild swings, when you go from $5.88 to $72.19 per unit, that's a pretty wild swing.
Mr. Chair, that's an excellent question. We have been involved in the last year in trying to get a complete handle on IRMD's financials, and I've had worked with our DAS Office of Business Administration and going through and combing through those budgets and combing through the rate development methodology, and we have a lot better handle on where it is today. So we know what the cost drivers are, particularly in the data center where we've changed the accounting structure so that we can actually measure what the cost drivers are. So we know, for instance, what it takes now to maintain that mainframe system over time, what the staffing requirements are, what the maintenance costs would be, what the other environmental costs are.
Representative Patrice?
Mr. Chair, though, this number still don't add up. If it was 588 in the 0103 biennium, and that was in our legislatively adopted budget, was $14 million. And now we're moving it from $5.88 to $72.19. There's no way the budgeted number even makes sense. I mean, the numbers don't add up. And that's why, I mean, there's no way. I mean, even if it's from 588, I don't know what percentage, six times. That's a tenfold increase. I mean, it should be 140 million.
Yeah, it's 1,500%.
This doesn't jive with me from just a pure accounting standpoint.
Correct?
Sorry, Mike can jump in and help me on this one, but the $72.19 rate was the 9901 rate. Okay, so we started at 72.19. We lowered it artificially to $5.88. It never should have been lowered to $5.88. It probably actually should have been somewhere above 72.19 for the 0103.
That was lowered in the 0103 by any?
Yes.
So what's the current rate?
The current rate is actually in the $60 range. So there has been a reduction. Now that looks like still a huge increase from the 588, but the important piece here is the 588 was never a real number.
Nor was it in the budget. If it was lowered then from 60 and we started out with a budget assumption of 72, then it should be lower than this, but for usage.
The 72.19 was the 9901 rate. The 72.19 has nothing to do with 0305. That was never an 0305 rate. The 0305 rate is the $60 rate.
Okay. Mr. Chair, second paragraph, last sentence. So I'm trying to read this closer.
Okay.
In the 0103, the prime batch processing rate was lowered from $72.19. So I assume that was the rate that was approved. To $5.88.
No, the 72.19, I'm sorry to interrupt Representative Patridge, but the 72.19 was the budget development rate that we came in here, a 9901 rate, an original 0103 budget development rate. During the legislative process, the budget building process, we came to you and said we can reduce this rate to $5.88. Or at least that is my recollection of what occurred.
During the 0103, or that was in the interim?
For 0103.
Okay, all right. And, okay, everything, Patrick?
Well, I still don't. If it was 72.19 during the 9901, and they came in during 0103 and dropped it the 588 or some reduction beyond that, then it should be either way lower or way higher, depending. It's just such a wild swing in the rate based upon the budget. I'm just not following.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, the important thing, and I know this is difficult to get, but we're basically fessing up here and saying the 588 was a wrong number, absolutely. What we thought had occurred at that point in time was that we had a huge ending balance in IRMD that allowed us to reduce that rate because we didn't have to pull in new revenue because we already had dollars sitting there in an ending balance. Reality was, as Mike mentioned, once they tied everything up, realized that they did not have that huge ending balance. So then they weren't pulling in the new revenue that they actually needed to continue to provide the services. So the 588, which is really the difficult to understand piece where we're jumping so big, it never should have been there in the first place. It was completely a misnomer.
Was it in fact charged, though, the 588?
That is what we've been charging, and so they've been pulling in much less revenue this biennium than they actually
draining off that high beginning balance.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, that wasn't there in the first place. Okay.
Representative Johnson.
I guess the totality of this conversation leads me inexorably to my question. What tools are not in place to allow a manager to make a dumb decision like this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, at the time this happened, I think the divisions at DAS were almost they were too independent. They were very self-functioning. We did not have a centralized budgeting and accounting system for the department. We did not have the REFIPS. Remember, we talked about that during our public hearings, the revenue, what's REFIPS stand for? Revenue, funding, balance, and expenditures, where we now have a system, a centralized system. Before, each of the divisions in DAS kind of did their own thing, and they had their own accounting people, and they had their own budget people, and they made their own decisions. We don't have that anymore. We have a centralized system. We have centralized staff that report up to the director. And so there's much different oversight than there was when this happened.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please follow up, Representative.
Is the person who made this decision still a manager?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, that person is the director of the Portland Development Commission. Thank you.
Okay. So in fact, the building blocks that go into the 7219, is there some attempt to recover from the 588 rate in the building block?
Yeah. Unfortunately, during the current biennium, there were a couple of agencies that I think Ms. Becker already mentioned, PERS and DAS Centrally, were able to help somewhat offset that rate reduction, but other agencies this biennium were not asked to actually pay the true cost of the GGDC Center for this current biennium. So agencies were actually able to take advantage of that lower rate, which was far below what the cost they actually incurred.
What other agencies, PERS and who?
PERS and State Controller's Division.
Okay, Representative Patridge.
So, Mr. Chair, I just wonder when the 588 and 296 rates were put into effect.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I'm not sure of the actual date. I can tell you that. I know it was proposed for the budget period 0103. I'm not sure when they actually went into effect.
So was the 0103, Mr. Chair, follow up then. Was the 0103 budget based upon these lower rates that was approved? So my question is, if they had $72.19 during the 99.01 and the $22.64, those were the rates or approximate rates, the spending was $15.4 million. Then if we dropped it down to $5.88 and $2.96 for the 01 or 0103 budget, that number went down to $14 million. And I assume that you had a tenfold increase in the amount of processing that was available, and tenfold increase in the amount of process of data time cycles or whatever.
That was depending.
Then I'm trying to get to. Now we're bumping the rate back up to $60. Has the number of cycles gone down? 10 times. I mean, I can't follow the logic.
No,
I can't follow the bouncing ball.
I understand what the issue is. On the expenditure side, remember the issue here was rates, which were artificially low, versus actual expenditures. So the issue is that the expenditure levels stayed relatively the same. There were some reductions that were made during the last legislative session that caused a decrease on the expenditure side from the $15 million to the $14 million side. Where we took the money, what the rate comes out of is the revenue side. So we weren't bringing in as much revenue. The expenditures stayed in relatively the same place, except for some efficiencies that you took through the legislative process. We thought we had an ending balance sitting there that allowed us to artificially reduce the rates. So we were reducing the amount of revenue that we were bringing. That's the rate side of the equation. The okay. expenditure side of the equation, they still have the same expenditures. They still kept chunking along.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, then, so how did the expenditures raise by $9 million between last biennium and this biennium?
That's the processing and the...
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, several things. One, the expenditure rate of 14 to 15 million was actually inadequate in the data center. When I went in there a little over a year ago, we had a projected needs in terms of expenditures of close to 20 million, and the rate structure was going to generate revenues just under $10 million. So we had a huge problem in there. I think there's been a problem with budgeting for the data center for some time, and we have spent the last year or so trying to get a handle on what it actually costs to run that program. One other point of clarification, in terms of the amount of processor time that was available and being used, that did, in fact, decrease substantially with the implementation of a faster machine because, again, we're charging based on the amount of time used. When you have a piece of equipment that's 6 to 10 times as fast as what it replaced, suddenly the consumption goes way down, but you still have the same cost or higher cost.
Senator Winters and then Representative Johnson.
I guess, and I'm feeling about as frustrated and confused as everybody else. I think I'm this analyst. Suddenly no tools are in place since 99. What preceded 99? I mean, this isn't new that you're charging rates or rate setting. And I want to go back to Representative Johnson's question. What tools are in place that would allow this not to happen again? And it's not just enough to say that we're, you know, doing some oversight. I mean, what is it that you are now going to do from a management standpoint to assure that this won't occur in the future?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, or Senator Winters, excuse me, several things have been put in place. One, as I mentioned before, we've gone through our entire accounting structure, and we now are tracking that. We're tracking every expenditure, and we know exactly what account it goes to, so we know what it should be associated with. Secondly, we've implemented a system department-wide that Cindy alluded to called the Revenue Expenditure Forecast and Budget Planning System, I believe, the REFBIP system, which allows us to track those expenditures in real time. That was one of the problems that we had in the past, is that, one, people weren't capturing the data in the proper account code, so there really was no way to tell what it cost to do a specific service. It wasn't getting granular enough. And, two, the timeliness of the reporting on the accounting wasn't such that you could see what was happening in real time. So you would get cash flows that would be fairly closely synced up to where the business was, but you might get expenditure, revenue and expenditure reports that were several months behind, and it was very, very difficult then to build budgets and do planning.
Excuse me, Mike, real time, is your accounting system hooked up in real time or is it just weekly?
Mr. Chair, Dallas, as Cora indicates, it's 1 month behind. What we're actually doing is going into the data mart, which is the general ledger data that's dropped in from the statewide financial management application, and pulling that into this system that allows us to merge all that and do budget planning and throughout the course of the biennium.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, the data mart is uploaded off of the SFMS weekly. So they get new numbers that are reflective of up through the prior week. Is that correct? Yes, it is. The data mart is instead of allowing people to have access directly into the accounting system, the data is loaded into what's called a data warehouse, it's an area where then they can go in and use different inquiry methods. They develop the internal management reports. I think Gary has passed some out. So I just didn't want the committee to believe that there is a real-time
Thank you.
Access to the financial information here.
Okay. And I just have one question relative to those folks that are paying the higher rate. If the State Comptroller's Division was one that was paying the higher rate, has that higher rate now been reflected in that State Comptroller's budget too?
Mr. Chair, yes, it has been in their GBB analysis, and any reductions that you take through this process here will be reflected as a reduction from their balance budget level.
Is it then proposed that we roll back that rate because of the fact that that particular division was one of the pickups to allow the $5 rate to proceed forward? Excuse me.
Not directly, Representative. Remember, the Controller's Division was actually, Controller's Division and PERS were the two, they're not both agencies, agency and division, that actually had allowed for the higher rate to begin with when their budget was passed because of timing last session. They actually still had.
Cora, when you say that they picked it up, they just were picking it up at the regular rate, not the deficiency for any other budgets. Okay.
Although they paid the lower rate for a period of time during this biennium, they have sufficient limitation to allow them to pick up
to expend the greater amount.
And so the increase from a limitation standpoint doesn't look as big for them because they already had a higher limitation in their budget.
All right.
So when you roll up to the new rate, it doesn't look like such a huge change.
All right. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The more we talk, the more confused I'm getting. And Senator Winters and I think, are still both headed in the same direction. To have a reduction in cost this dramatic, and you can continue to proceed ahead, all of you have said this rapid decline in revenues. How long could you go without this decline in revenues becoming just abundantly obvious?
Actually, Representative Johnson, it's been obvious for some time. During the middle of this biennium, when we brought RefBips up online and were able to get into the details of the IRMD budget and specifically the GGDC piece of it, it was pretty obvious that the rate shouldn't have been reduced at that level. Obviously, because we were going through special sessions and agencies didn't have within their own budgets the opportunity to pay a higher rate, we did not ask them to do that. IRMD has really had to ramp down on some of their expenses in order to stay within the operating costs and the revenue that they had this biennium. And the two major users, PERS and the State Controller's Division, did have limitations sufficient to help bump back up to a higher rate. If they had not been able to do that, IRMD probably would have been in major trouble.
President Johnson.
Okay, limitation, great. How about just plain cash flow? At some point, this had to have cash flowed badly.
Absolutely.
And so, what happened then?
We were in a situation where IRMD had when we talk about having 1 or 2 or 3 months of ending balance reserve in order to help offset for any emergency expenditures or anything, they have been in a place where they have not had that. And that's a very risky position. And if they would have had any major expenditures that would have come up, we would have been in a very significant problem situation.
Last follow-up. You said they had to ramp down on costs. They've gone from $73 to $6. Pretty soon, cash flow is becoming obvious. They're ramping down on costs enough to hide the cash flow.
No.
Okay.
Cash flow, do you want?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we were actually taking every measure we could to try to ameliorate the problem. One of the things we did was take extreme short-term cost-cutting measures because we had to reduce both the expenditure side, the cost side, and we had to do something about the revenue side.
You're making my point. I want you to stop so I can get the fine point I want to put on this. If you found places to cut costs and you were able to mask a problem of this magnitude, why is it now that it's okay to go back up to 60? You were cutting costs, and I'm trying to figure out.
If I'm right. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the cutting costs were one-time short-term cost-cutting. It's essentially...
Give me an example of what?
It's, well, for instance, deferring maintenance on software. And we get into a point where either we can't use that software any longer, or then we have to pay a cost down the road. deferring upgrading or replacing systems. There comes a point when you can no longer do that. An example would be when you're dealing in the mainframe processing arena, at some point your load increases to the point that the equipment's no longer capable of handling, and or the technology moves forward and we're sort of frozen in time at a certain software level. Those are the kinds of decisions we were making to cut costs. The other things we were doing was, for instance, we were a 7x24 facility, meaning we had operators on staff at night to handle the jobs when most of the processing are done. We cut that and went to putting people on call so that in the event that something went wrong with a job, they would have to come in and deal with it, and that creates an inconvenience for the agency and it can cause problems with the processing. The other point I want to make is that those cost-cutting exercises only dealt with a fraction of this problem. The bulk of the problem, as Cora indicated, was dealt with through reducing our ending balance. Normally, IRMD, to have a 60-day ending balance, you'd be looking at $8 or $9 million, and we took that down to near zero.
Final follow-up.
If you've got the mainframe processing that goes so much faster now, are you still a 24/7 shop?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we are not currently, we run 24/7, but we don't necessarily have people on site 24/7. We want to bring that back because it's more efficient to do that when you run into a problem with processing to have somebody on site to be able to solve it immediately.
Okay.
Senator?
Just to follow, you said you had a 60-day reserve and you depleted almost all of it. Can you give us specifically how much did you spend your reserve down to? Because that would help me understand what you had to do in deferred maintenance and some of those other issues, you know, in order to get to where you're balanced out. Because right now, what it appears is, though, even if you do deferred maintenance, that perhaps you had to do some other cost-cutting kinds of things in order to get to become balanced. And I just like to have a better understanding of, you know, what was your reserve worked down to, and was, if you worked it down to zero, did you work it down to 1 million? What happened with your reserve?
Do we have a 48-month cash for each of the divisions, each of the 9 divisions?
IRMD definitely does not have 48 months.
But I mean, the cash analysis, a 48-month cash analysis for the past biennium and for the anticipated biennium.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Mr. Chair, I think we presented that information to staff. I think you have.
Yeah, we have passed it around sometime in the past.
Okay, for each division then.
So, Mr. Chair, 24 months. Is your reserve 60 days, 90 days? What's the?
Well, it is now. Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, a healthy balance for a program like IRMD's would be a 60-day balance, but we're now down to less than a 30-day balance.
So in 0103, I mean, yeah, 9901, you had a 60-day reserve. 0103, did you have a, you know, is that when you began depleting?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, actually, in 9901, we thought we had much more than a 60-day balance. And because of the revenue issues, we actually have brought IRMD down to below a 30-day balance.
Mr. Chair, would help if you had actual numbers as to how much that you thought you had in 9901, how much you actually ended up having in 9901, and then how much did you have to deplete, take from your reserve, and how much came out of your ramping down or your cost cutting. That would, I think, paint a better picture and a better understanding for
us. Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I think we can do that for you. And I would just like to follow up, if I may, on Representative Johnson's earlier question regarding the costs that the ramping down has brought us to a $5.88 range. I just want to make it, and I know I've made this point a couple of times, but I just want to make it clear that the cost of the division we're incurring were not $5.88. They were bringing in revenue at $5.88. The cost they were incurring were still, even with the reductions, were still closer to $72. So expenses were still at a higher level. We simply weren't bringing in the right revenue.
And Cora, bless your heart, you're just reinforcing my point. How a manager is so bereft of the tools or the good judgment that would allow them to make a reduction at a factor of times 14.
Right.
if that's malfeasance.
No, I understand that, and Chair Representative Johnson, I don't want to point fingers at anybody, especially when those folks are no longer with the state to defend themselves. But we thought we had a higher ending balance. I say we, but the folks who were working with the process at the time thought that they had a resource that allowed them to do that. When the folks that you see here before you at the table came on board and started looking at the numbers and we brought ref bits up, it became clear fairly early on during the biennium that that was not sufficient. And they have been taking the cost-cutting measures, they've been talking with the PERS and with the Controller Division, those agencies that had the resources that were able to allow them to start paying the higher revenue again. So it became obvious very quickly to those that you've got working in front of you today, and they've spent the last several months trying to fix it.
Senator Devlin's been very patient. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mine's actually a very simple question, and that is, when the rate was set before, what was the approval process for changing the rate versus what would the approval process be for now for changing a rate like that within the department?
What was the approval process then?
I'm sorry if I'm stuttering a bit. Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, it's the same process, the same legislative process that you're talking about here. The problem was that we had misinformation that went into the process. So at the time, although not only did we have misinformation, we also didn't have the right systems in order to really tell us the right information at the time. RefBits now really allows the divisions within DAS to understand it I say real time, as close to real time as we can get, obviously not a daily or hourly basis.
Senator Devlin, follow up. Yes.
Are we actually confusing two different things here in the sense that your rate drop that you were going to had nothing to do with your cost of operating? It had only to do with the fact that you had a reserve and you were trying to deplete that reserve. But in reality, you didn't have the reserve
correct.
You thought that you had.
That is absolutely correct, Senator Devlin.
Okay, back to Representative Johnson.
No, thank you.
Okay, Senator Winters.
I just have a very quick question. Why would one want to deplete the reserve?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, there are several reasons. One is that if we were in fact rolling up the kinds of reserves that people were talking about, then that would mean that we were overcharging. We were charging more than it actually cost to provide the service. So we would reduce the rates, and the agencies would then pay less for that service. The other issue is if you generate substantial reserves, you run into afoul of federal law, A87, and you actually end up paying federal penalties. So there are incentives to manage much closer to cost.
Well, I guess maybe I should phrase it another way, that perhaps it isn't depleting the reserve, but bringing the reserve down to an acceptable level, because that's
correct.
Representative Patridge?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to. I feel like we're chasing our tail. I'm looking at page 39 of 168, which is the IRND budget. The agency comes in and says that they, in 99-01 actuals, their ending fund balance was $17 million. Now, here, I'll share with you on this. $17 million. The legislatively adopted budget was 25.2 million was what we thought the ending fund balance is. We're estimated 6.9, which I know is not an actual, and I'm still not sure on these estimates. The agency requests 7.5 million ending fund balance this biennium. The governor keeps it at 16 million. So I don't follow the logic in we spend it down, we don't spend it down. I understand, too, that we combined printing and some other things in here, but I can't follow where we're going and workload.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, you're looking at IRND's entire budget, which includes not only GGDC, but some of the other, all of the other sections within the division. And remember that some of those extra dollars that are sitting in GBB are actually being pulled out through this process because the agency had asked for packages that we actually either denied or revised during the process. That will flow through looking like a larger ending balance, and that's part of what you're taking here today. So that's part of what you're seeing with a larger ending balance. With respect to 9901, the dollars that actually ended up being an ending balance for the division in total are much different than what we thought they were going to be when we went through the rate process. I think we thought they were above $25-30 million at the time, and largely within the GDDC component. In reality, they turned out to be much closer to $17 million. Now, remember, this is a large operating division, so while $17 million looks like a huge amount of dollars, if you talk about the dollars that actually flow through the division, and largely all within non-limited, that actually is closer to probably the 60 or just slightly over a 60-day balance at any given point in time.
Can we do this? Let me just venture out here. Maybe what we could do, we've got a full committee right now, and I think we're probably in a position where we could work most everything with the exception of the information resource management division. And Dallas, you've got a revised recommendation relative to the performance measurements and the progress board, and would this be satisfactory to go ahead and work these others pending then the final conclusion on the information resource management division? Any feeling of the members?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Devlin, I would appreciate
it. Mr. Chairman, I'm fine with that. There was one other issue that I didn't know if it had been addressed also, and I know there's been a lot of discussions behind the scenes, and that is the community solutions team in terms of where they would be.
Whether that would move to the budget, the governor's budget,
right,
at that point. Dallas, your recommendation, I believe, was to continue to move that, and it has three different names. We've actually heard the community solutions team or the community solutions office or the community development office, whichever we want to call it. We've actually heard that. Dallas, is your recommendation
still the same?
My recommendation is still the same on that, sir.
With the listening to the testimony and the concerns of the subcommittee, I would be willing to change my recommendation. The progress board, for purposes of moving the budget, it seemed to be more appropriate to allow the FTE to continue but not fund them yet. Give them time to look for other funds and can come back later and seek other fund limitation, but to continue with the FTE progress board. So that would be the change I would suggest for purposes of moving this budget with the progress board. I would not change the recommendation of the community development office, community solutions team. That's not to say that it can't come back later, but
your recommendation is those move to the governor for
to be considered with the governor's
that's
office.
Where
budget,
the,
yes,
that's where the resources utilized at that point. Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to state for the record that I have heard some concerns expressed outside this committee about the elimination of the funding for the Children's Trust Fund, but I think that's not really a discussion right for right now. That's a discussion for later in the process.
I think you're absolutely right, Senator, and I appreciate your sensitivity to that issue as well. I think that it is an issue. Dallas, your recommendation with regard to the Community Solutions Office or Community Development Office or the Community Solutions Team and the Arrest and Return was that those both move to the Governor's Office, even though the Governor's Office would prefer to have those continue in the Department of Administrative Services.
Mr. Chairman, the Governor's Office concurred with the Arrest and Return budget under the Governor's Office. The only issue they had was with the Community Solutions Team.
And it's still your recommendation that the Community Solutions Office be funded at the Governor's Office level and be considered there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Relative to the Office of Director, we've heard the report there and the divisions. Budget Management, number two, the State Controller's Division, dropping down to number four, skipping IRMD, The Public Employee Benefit Board, number five, the Human Resource Service Board.
Mr. Chair, I have a question there.
Yes, Human Resources.
In the Human Resources, if I can put these two memoranda together, it appears that there's a $317,000 increase in 4375, the Employee Recruitment and Development. And given the magnitude of some of the cuts that we're engaged in right now, I'm trying to understand why the need for $317,000 more in employee development.
And we have Gary.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, employee development and recruitment is not just the recruitment of new people. It's the placement of people that are being bumped and moved around throughout all of state government right now. As we reduce positions, there's all kinds of bumping rights. And there's actually much more work, frankly, in that process than there ever is in the recruitment side of the process. And we're right in the middle of it at this point right now.
That's, I understand that.
Okay. Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair, I don't know where we ended up or where we landed on this thing. The department was talking about doing a reorg. We pointed out all the management classified people. I think we had 13 management people here, as well as the union negotiation people, which I understand why they're managers. And Director Weeks and I have had that conversation. But, you know, while I understand that there's a reorg going on here, by the same token, I don't know that we need to. I'd rather see us take this other money and let them try and fund it internally with their reorg as part of their, instead of their expenditure limitation pieces.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, we did give you, I believe we gave you the plan, which is to eliminate, to bring down the number of.
I got so much paper running.
Yeah, I understand, sir. But the plan is to reduce the number of management positions from 12 to 5. So it's more than a 50% reduction in the number of managers. Those positions that are formerly, that are now classified as managers will go down into classified ranks, and we won't be having the number of managers, and you were correct in expressing a concern about that. I agree with that. That plan is real. It's in process right
Director
now.
Director Weeks, the positions would still be there. The manager executive positions may not be
correct.
Utilized at that level.
There will only be five management positions. So that changes the nature of the positions. It will change the compensation and the status and so on like that.
My understanding in looking at the total budget that actually of the, I believe it was $11.5 million, we've actually estimated about $1.2 million, something in excess of 10% efficiencies thus far that have been extracted by legislative
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. That doesn't include these, you know, the movement of these positions, nor does it include, like Ms. Becker here holding three positions, all of which I'm not going to fill.
Representative Johnson.
So what happens to the seven vacant positions?
You're
dropping from 12 managers to five. You've got seven open management slots.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, there were 12 people that were classed as managers. Only five are actually management, true management, people who manage, like the director's executive assistant was in a management slot. That person's not going to be in a management. They won't be in management service anymore. They'll be in a classified position, which changes the nature of the job and probably the compensation and so on. We have the authority to do that because those are not under a union agreement.
I'm still trying to get the sense of, are you going to use up some of these management positions to up the compensation for the remaining? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, no. There's no plan to change the class of any of the five remaining managers. But the seven, they still, I don't want to mislead you, they'll remain in the workforce. They remain at a proper classification, which is a classified classification.
I think this has been, this discussion has been good. I guess what I'll do is have Dallas get back then with Jim and Cindy to see if we can save some amount of resource there. Maybe perhaps not the numbers of positions, but certainly the level of which positions are funded at. So let's then skip, in addition to number three, the IRMD, let's skip the Human Resource Services Division and go on to number Representative Patridge.
Just while I'm on it, Mr. Chair, yes, only if we're looking statewide at employee recruitment development per line item or for budget number 4375, the big driver there of the $300,000 is not in the Human Resource Services Division, which is where I would have expected it. There's only a $40,000 driver there. I think it's probably in the director's office or somebody someplace else under employee recruitment development. So it's not being provisioned out to all the various state agencies to any great degree. It's internal within DAS, so just so we're aware of that piece, because I don't think we're probably seeing that I don't think we're seeing that large jump in other agency budgets for employee recruitment and development. So that just concerns me as we move forward.
Mr. Chairman, I'll have to look at the detailed pages that
we're tabling this, so let's just get going.
We'll move past that then. Move into six, Procurement Fleet Surplus Services Division. Okay, and then number seven, Facilities Divisions. And number eight, Resource Management Division. I've got resource on Risk Management Division. And then finally, number nine, Operations Division. We have before us the recommendations as to those, right, relative to the nine divisions. We would move on all nine, with the exception of number three, the Information Resource Management Division, and number five, the Human Resource Services Division. Are there any objections to accepting the legislative fiscal's recommendation with regard to those seven divisions? Hearing and seeing none, we will go ahead and order the recommendation of legislative fiscal. Office of Health Policy and Research, we've received the legislative fiscal recommendation. Is there any objection to the recommendation which has been previously made to us on the Office of Health Research, Health Policy and Research? Hearing and seeing none, we will order that as recommended. And then the Oregon Progress Board, Dallas.
Mr. Chair, I would change this to no change to the governor's budget, which was to just bring forward the three positions.
Allow the three positions without funding limitation or authority.
So we need another funds limitation there, Mr. Chair. They're going to do what they need to do.
Come forward in e-board, I would guess, or at a later time during the session.
We will, Mr. Chairman of the committee, we will have a cleanup bill for adjustment to PERS rates and others that we should make changes.
Okay.
And so then with this action, we would authorize the three positions and allow DAS to either find the monies to drive those internally or solicit external either corporate or charitable contributions.
They certainly would be authorized to do that, and then they would need the funding limitation to do that, but there is no statewide assessment for it either at that point. Are there any objections to that recommendation? Heard the recommendation. So ordered. Then with regard to capital improvements, we've heard the recommendation relative to the capital improvements from legislative fiscal. Are there any objections to accepting that? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. And then capital construction, this is not capital outlay, with regard to the projects that are ongoing. Are there any discussion with regard to capital construction?
I think I'm about to answer my own question, because all of these capital construction projects are someplace else.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Dallas.
The DEQ health one is someplace else. That has to be funded out of another one. I thought that the Justice Building would be funded out of Justice's budget. However, I understand now that that is a uniform rent building, so it is the responsibility of the department. What is going on right now with Justice is discussions between Justice and facilities as to the temporary quartering, the type of arrangements that need to be made for them to move there. Right now, Justice is scheduled to move into the old Water Resources or Commerce Building.
The old Commerce Building.
Justice Building desperately needs to be renovated. The issue right now is in the planned budget for facilities. It provides a certain level of office equipment and office, basically it's systems, modular systems. and Justice Department, my understanding is wishing, looking for office space for all of its attorneys. So that's not included in the facilities package, if you will, for renovation. So they are still undergoing that discussion. So
do we have part of the renovation project somewhere before us?
Yes, it's in the capital construction.
Okay, all right.
Dallas, how about anything with DPSST in here?
There's nothing for DPSST.
Okay. Having heard the capital construction recommendations, are there any objections? Hearing seeing none, so ordered, and then special payments.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative, or Senator Devlin's recognized.
Mr. Chairman, just again for the record, I'm willing to go ahead with special payments at this time, but that the issue of the Children's Trust Fund, I believe, will come up in later budget discussions.
Thank you very much, Senator, and I recognize your sensitivity. Senator Winters?
Mr. Chair, since Representative Johnson, where is DPSST?
DPSST funding for the capital construction?
Well, the $5 million in the debt service somewhere should be.
It would be, I think, in DPSST's budget.
Okay.
All right. Would you like?
Thank you.
Is that $5 million? Is the $5 million in the castle?
The $5 million is what's already been floated.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patrick, they're really under the plan. There really isn't a lot of debt service because the construction doesn't get going until towards the end of the biennium. So the debt service really kicks in the next biennium.
So that'd be 03, 05, or 05, 07.
But there's debt service floating around. There's debt service floating around, and I'm not sure where that got caught up because we haven't trued that. I don't think.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
Representative Patridge, in the original governor's budget, there were no additional dollars for the next phase related to DPSST. Any amendments that have been proposed that I believe may be in the governor's revised budget, and I'm getting somewhat out of my league because I don't deal with DPSST, but any amendments that ultimately flow back to the capital construction side would have to be amended in the capital construction bill.
Okay.
And that, if you recall, is a separate bill. The capital construction bill itself is actually separate, so it would have to be reflected there.
So it's not in this one.
No. But the debt service for the existing debt that was floated this biennium is rolled up in what we just approved.
Okay. No, it would be in the agency budget.
DPSST budget.
But it gets transferred to you, and then you pay it, right?
As revenue for...
Right. But it has to pass through the DAS budget. So what we approve today, it passes through.
And it may not be in the capital construction right now. So it'll have to be amended in a later time, Cora?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, the debt service that is in the DPSST budget was for the existing, what already took place and what was already planned to take place. So, I'm talking somewhat out of my arena here, but for any new limitation, what's in the DAS bill is any new limitation to actually expend to build these facilities. So they're paying for the piece that already is being built or has been started to be built, the planning process, et cetera.
And is that debt service not in here then, Cora?
The debt service is in the agency's budget, and so, yes, the revenue would flow through to here. But as far as new limitation related to that second phase, there's nothing in this budget.
The debt service to date
is wrapped in
debt service
right now.
Okay.
Ongoing is not considered.
Okay. All right. And we're discussing special payments, and we have a reservation relative to the Children's Trust Fund. You've heard the balance of the recommendation with regard to the special payments. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, we will order the legislative fiscal's recommendation there. Now, I don't think that we act on the performance measurements or the agency drivers at that point. Those are merely for discussion. And we have approved this budget with the exception of item 3, Information Resource Management Division, and item 5, the Human Resource Services Division. Dallas, you'll get us revised numbers on the Human Resource Services Division.
Yes, sir, I will.
All right. Now, do we... I did not order the office of the director at this particular point. Should we do that as a separate item?
Please.
Okay. That is on the face page, and that includes, of course, the $450,000 for the cost allocation studies that were transferred in through the Department of Transportation. Are there any objections to ordering legislative fiscals on the office of the director? Hearing and seeing,
Mr. Chair.
Patrick?
Wait a second.
Okay. I didn't grab it yet. Representative Patrick and then Senator Dever.
Well, I talked to the... I'd like the director's office to reflect the CIO position, which was supposed to be an RMD, which we've talked now, and it should, in my opinion, report to the office of the director. That's how it was set up, but I don't know if they want to put in a new management structure where they want it reflected budgetarily, but that was my understanding, was it was a direct report to the director.
Director Weeks?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge and I have talked about this a couple of times now, I think, and the CIO will report to the director, and I'm happy to have it as drawn as a line item report. It can be either in the director's office or it's in the MAG, or it's in the IRMD budget, either way, but it's going to report to me.
We'll ask for subsequent reports.
Whatever, we put it in the...
We can
I just want it to be reflected somewhere.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, it could be a budget language that makes it clear.
Yeah, let's get it in the budget report. And then Senator Devlin, you're
fine? I'm fine, Mr. Chairman.
You're fine with that.
All right.
You've heard the recommendation then as modified to include that for the further discussion in the budget note, budget report. Are there any objections to approving the Office of the Director? Hearing and seeing no objections, so ordered. So, Director Weeks, we're down to the issues on the Information Resource Management Division and the Human Resource Services Division for tomorrow. If we can work out, I think the Human Resource Division, there's some small amounts of savings.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Correct. And we'll have that okay. For tomorrow. I want to be sure I'm clear, Mr. Chairman, on what we're going to deliver tomorrow on the IRMD piece so we can move that off.
President Patridge, is there some specific item that we're going to have to...
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying. They still haven't given us an explanation. I don't feel like we've got a good explanation of...
For the ins and outs, the pluses and minuses.
What the rates are in terms of how they're calculated, and so much of what we're doing is the IRMD rate and the data center rate.
So we need a, Mr. Chairman, then we need a more of an explanation on the rates that... Okay.
If we could,
no, the Dallas says no.
If I may... I'm going to need some clarification here, too, because IRMD has a whole myriad of rates. So they're generally built. They're built on the costs that you pass through contracts, and then the costs that you incur for personnel and the like. So if we had an idea of what... There is not one rate, so if we have some clarity on which rate we are looking at...
I think part of it is the beginning balances, the spend down on those beginning balances, and then the actual receipts and how they're accounted for. Representative Patridge, is that a portion of the concern?
Yeah, I think that's a portion of... That's a large portion of the concern, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to figure out where they're... How come they're charging as much money as they're charging, and in light of where their budget's at?
One of the things that we've been looking for, Representative Patridge, was the 48-month cash, and Jim Carbone is going to provide that for us. However, in the meantime, the one that I do have is one that was provided to us in testimony by Debbie Ferry. Ms. Ferry testified before the commission back, or before this subcommittee back in February, and discussed and provided us some of the information on the mainframe billing and how the State Controller's Division had, in fact, what Cora has told us, that the State Controller's Division had actually picked up a larger share of the freight in that process, and then gave us, and I believe that's what account number 10703, State Controller's balances, is the net ending balances of cash. And that's gone from October of a high, I guess that wasn't a high, but October of 99 through the first part of 2000. That's the billing?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, you're right. The gross billing, volume discount, so that'd be net billing. I'm sorry. I thought I had the cash balances. I do not.
But we will get that.
Okay. I beg your pardon, Stampede, to apologize. I thought I was looking at that.
We'll go back to 9901, which is what Representative Patrick said, and really look at the revenues and costs and the rates, overlay the rates on the revenues and costs, and to the extent that when we drop the rates, where do we pick up the additional money to finance and particularly on the GDDC, I think is what the focus is. So how did we go from the rates we had in 9901 to how did that translate into costs? What were the actual expenditures? And just do an analysis between from 9901 forward in each of those areas for the general government data center.
I'm anticipating, Sandy, that what you'll do is you'll work with Dallas and Representative Patridge to get that presentation to us so that we'll have some actual ending cash balances.
Right.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
An unrelated issue. I'm jumping around a little bit, but as long as you're coming back with these answers, you left on our desk this morning the Productivity Improvement Fund summary with an indication of three loans that were made, $150,000 to the State Fair, $104,000 to Corrections, and $80,000 to DAS. How have those loans performed?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, they've all been repaid.
All of them are paid back.
Right, that's correct.
Great.
And these, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, these are just examples. We have a full list. These are not all the loans and the grants. We have a much broader list, but we can provide that to you if you'd like.
And just remind me, what's the totality of the, what's the corpus available?
$600,000, wasn't it?
Mr. Chair, $708,000.
$708,000?
Yes.
Okay. And that's the amount that's being transferred back into general fund. Okay. Further questions in that regard? So we do have those two modifications and further amplification information. Really one modification with the other being more amplification and additional information. Cindy?
Chair, I just had a question on the HRSD. Are you looking for the dollar savings when we reclass?
As that reclass takes place and so we'll be able to modify the budget.
Right. Yes.
Okay. With that, we will stand adjourned until even time tomorrow, and folks will work these other two and approve the budget in total tomorrow if that's acceptable. With that, we'll see you at 8:30 in the morning. Thank you very kindly. We will stand adjourned and recess this over until tomorrow morning, House Bill 5002, and the work session tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.